Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Lead ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Today, we're replaying a story that first aired on our show back in March. It's about a hockey coach with a long history of child sexual assault accusations.
Since this story was first reported by The Athletic's Katie Strang, there have been a couple of developments and follow-up reporting by Katie. We'll update you on those after the episode.
And just as a quick warning, the episode contains details about alleged sexual abuse and sexual trauma, and the content might be emotionally upsetting for some listeners. All right, here's the episode.
In September 2018, the head hockey coach at Robert Morris University, Illinois, made a sudden exit from the team's locker room. He didn't tell the players where he was going or why. He simply grabbed his bags and left. One of the assistant coaches told the team that the coach, Thomas Chico Adradas, had an emergency. It wasn't until months later that players learned that Adradas, who had been a hockey coach for decades, had been accused of sexual abuse by a former player.
The Athletic's Katie Strang decided to look into Adradas's past, and she found multiple former players who told similar stories of abuse. They say Adradas tricked them into having sexual encounters with someone they thought was a woman, when in fact, they now believe it was Adradas.
Katie Strang joins us today to talk about what she found in her reporting and to explain how, despite multiple reports against the coach over decades, he was able to keep coaching. From Wondery and The Athletic, I'm Kavitha Davidson.
And I'm Anders Kelto. It's Thursday, March 5th, and this is The Lead.
It felt like something great was happening.
There was just something about the emotion and that moment.
You gotta go faster, faster!
The failures of the past don't matter because we've got this guy.
I have never seen anything like that.
That's not good news.
This isn't a story where you interview the athlete and go home. It stays with you.
So, Katie, how did this story come onto your radar?
So I got a call in late October from a friend of mine who is pretty entrenched in the Chicago hockey scene. And he, knowing that this is a subject I feel very passionate about and have some experience in reporting on, just gave me a call and said, listen, this is a guy that we've heard about for years, years upon years. I mean, decades, really. And I think you should look into him.
And the story is about this hockey coach, Thomas Adradas. Who is Thomas Adradas?
A prolific amateur hockey coach that anyone that came up through the ranks in the Chicago amateur hockey scene would know about. So he started coaching in the early 80s and was coaching until pretty recently, actually. He resigned his position at Robert Morris University in Illinois in September of 2018.
And he resigned that position after a letter was sent from a former player who he coached. Tell us about the person who wrote this letter, a person named Mike Sachs.
Sure. Mike Sachs is a middle-aged man. He's 52 years old. He played for Adradas when he was a teenager. And Adradas cultivated a very close relationship with not only Sachs, but also his father. He was sort of an intermediary between these young teenage hockey players and their dreams. So, you know, he had the ability to introduce a player to an NHL scout, an OHL scout, someone that was recruiting for a college team. And so he was essentially the conduit who could help a player really raise their profile and their acclaim and their status to try to take that next step.
And at some point, Adratus actually ends up becoming Mike's legal guardian. How does that situation come about?
Yeah, so Mike's grades started to dip in school. He will admit that he was never... He never really prioritized school, right? Like, hockey was his life. It was his passion. It was his dream. That's what he cared about. And so when his grades began to dip, that kind of created some tension with his family and his parents. And according to Mike, Adratus saw this as basically an opportunity to tell his parents, hey, you know, maybe his neighborhood buddies aren't having a great influence on him. We can work out an arrangement where Mike can come live with me. I can shuttle him to and from, you know, school to practice, and he can come back and stay during weekends with you.
Can you tell us about this house and who else lived here?
Sure. It was colloquially known as the Hockey House, and it was in Lisle, Illinois. And Mike was not the only player that lived there. There were several other players, in fact. And so there were a number of rooms where players boarded, basically, in a big unfinished basement where guys would gather and hang out and watch hockey.
And once he moves in, when did it become clear that Adratus was treating Mike differently than the other boys?
Almost right away. You know, he grew up in a house with three sisters, so he was really pumped to live in a house with a bunch of hockey friends and watch hockey and do things that teenage boys do. And immediately he got the sense that Adratus' treatment toward him had shifted. So his coach would start asking him for shoulder massages and orchestrate reasons for the two of them to be alone together. And what others in the house started to notice is that he was oddly territorial about Mike, and that he would grow jealous if Mike wanted to hang out with other people, and he would sometimes become agitated if he wasn't around or if his attention was directed elsewhere. At the time, Adratus was only 12 years older than Mike, so he's still a young coach. He's a player's coach. He's in his late 20s, so he gets it. He understands. He knows what teenagers are talking about. So they really felt like they could confide in him and talk about things with him in a way that they might not with a parent.
But then these become more than just conversations.
Yes. So there's this drive that Adratus takes Mike for, and he takes him through this place called the Forest Preserves in Chicago. And that was Mike's favorite place. And, you know, his coach knew that he loved that place out in nature. And he told him about this woman. And this woman, he said, her name was Sheila. And this woman was a very attractive young woman who, he said, used to perform oral sex on both him and his teammate. And he said, if you want to, I can call her and she'd be happy to do this anytime. With the caveat being that the only catch is you have to be bound by the ankles and restrained with your hands tied to the bedpost and blindfolded. And the reason Adratus gave, according to Mike, is that this young woman had been sexually assaulted previously, and she wanted to be assured of being able to make a quick and safe exit if she got spooked. And so Mike thought, well, I mean, if these other guys have done it and there's no problem, then what's the issue? So he said, okay. The first time that it happened, he was instructed to basically wait outside on the porch, and that when the porch light came on, that meant it was okay for him to come in. Adratus told him that he would go first, according to Mike, and that when the room was empty, he could go in and restrain himself using a sash from a robe and neckties around the footboard and place a pillowcase over his head. And that's what he did. Someone entered and performed oral sex on him, and then they left. And he didn't think much of it. But then these requests started to happen more and more frequently. And Adratus would become more and more agitated if Mike didn't seem like he wanted to partake. He felt like he couldn't say no. He felt trapped. This was the person that, up until this point, had done a ton for his hockey career and made that very well known to Mike. And so he didn't know how and wasn't quite prepared to be able to say no.
And Katie, when did Mike start to suspect that Sheila was actually Adratus?
So that didn't start happening until they were both living in Minnesota together. Mike started playing for a junior team in the Twin Cities area. And at that same time, Adratus got an assistant coaching job with the University of Minnesota. So they relocated together to Minneapolis. And it was there that Mike realized that it didn't quite feel the same as when it did when it happened at the hockey house in Illinois. It also started to feel differently from time to time. And what Mike deduced from that and what he told me and what he included in his letter to both Robert Morris and the ACHA is that he believes he was being prostituted out. And part of the reason behind that is Mike said that Adratus suddenly seemed flush with cash and would allow him to use his ATM card at will and bought him expensive gifts such as a new car, and that he would grow very agitated when Mike didn't want to partake. And so that led him to believe that Adratus was possibly doing this in exchange for money.
And there was one occurrence where Sheila tried to push their encounter beyond oral sex.
The person who was in the room to perform oral sex asked Mike to anally penetrate them, and Mike did not want to do that and said no, and the person left the room. It never happened again after that.
And during the period that this is all happening, Adratus is an assistant coach at the University of Minnesota. Mike is playing for a USHL team, and he told you that around this time, his demeanor changed and the way that he interacted with teammates changed.
Yeah, there were all these facets of his life that were slowly starting to erode. So, you know, he was at a new school and he didn't make friends. He ate alone at lunch. He kept his books in his car. He never even opened his locker. He'd fall asleep in class. And his play was dipping as well. He was clashing with his coach. He was insubordinate at times. He wasn't getting along super well with teammates. But he couldn't really put all this together. He couldn't quite pinpoint why.
So, Katie, your reporting has found that this was not just limited to Mike. How widespread was this abuse?
Multiple other former players of Adratus disclosed to me a near identical story to Sachs, down to really sort of uncanny details. Him even bringing some of the players to the same restaurant before he propositioned them, according to them. And what we've found is that that behavior spans at the very least more than a decade.
And Mike wasn't the first person to report him. And rumors and accusations about Adratus had been circling for years.
For decades, even. When Mike sent that letter, it was 2018. But 8 years prior, another player who had a similar experience to Mike had heard that Adratus was going to be inducted as part of the 2009 class of the Illinois Hockey Hall of Fame. And when he heard this, he thought, oh no, people need to know. And so he reached out to AHI, which is a regional governing body within the USA Hockey structure that governs amateur hockey in the state of Illinois. And he reached an official with AHI and told him the kind of broad strokes of what had experienced and was asked to draft a letter. And so in February of 2010, Chris Jensen drafted that letter and detailed pretty specifically what his experience had been like with Adratus and what he believed happened to him by Adratus.
And what happens as a result of Chris Jensen's letter?
That's a good question, and one that no one at AHI is willing to discuss. But according to Jensen, he was notified that they posed these allegations to Adratus and asked him to come to some sort of hearing. And Adratus had a breakdown of some sorts and couldn't or wouldn't cooperate with the proceedings. So according to Chris, they told him that Adratus would not be allowed to coach any AHI sanctioned teams from that point forward. Now, it's been difficult to determine whether that actually happened. I've contacted several AHI officials. None want to talk about it. I've been referred to attorneys for the organization, and those attorneys don't want to talk about it either. And I've confronted at least one person in person about it. And that person is now the president of USA Hockey.
Hi, I'm Catherine Bogart with USA Hockey alongside newly elected USA Hockey president, Jim Smith. Jim, congratulations. Tell me what this position means to you.
I'm excited about the position, and I've got some really big shoes to fill from Walter Busch and Ron DiGregorio, and I followed them for the last, 30 years.
So Jim Smith held a couple of different roles with AHI during that time period and was regarded as a very influential member of that organization that went on to rise through the ranks of USA Hockey's leadership, where he remains president today.
And as president of USA Hockey, you asked him about these accusations, about the letter, and what did Jim Smith say?
He said he didn't know that AHI was notified about Chris Jensen in 2010, and that he didn't know why Adratus' name suddenly disappeared from the Hall of Fame ballot.
When Katie, your reporting found that in addition to being reported to AHI, Adratus was also reported to the University of Minnesota back in 1985 after his year coaching there.
So after the season, two different people notified then athletic director Paul Giel. So Tony Kellen, who was a junior defenseman at the time, went to Paul Giel and told him this story of what was happening. And he said that Paul Giel told him, I will take care of it, and he's out of here, and he'll never come back. Now, another person, his name's Kevin Hartzell. He was Mike Sachs's coach for that junior team he was playing on. He was also a Minnesota alum. He was a fellow hockey player who knew a bunch of the players and was friendly with them, and he had heard this. He had heard the rumors, and he had also been personally confided in. And he went to Paul Giel and he said, you need to know about this. And he said that when he told Paul Giel seemed shocked. So then there's a third person that enters the equation, Chuck Grillo, who was then an NHL scout, but very much like a power broker within the Minnesota hockey community. And he had heard about this. And so he called Adratus himself and he said, listen, I've heard these rumors. If these rumors are true, you need to leave town within 24 hours. And I've talked to Chuck Grillo about that conversation. And he said, listen, I didn't have firsthand information. But what I had was a pretty specific story. And so when I presented him with that and told him that if the rumors are true to leave town, he left. So what does that tell you?
This is something that everyone or a lot of people on the team knew was happening, but nobody was really talking about it openly or in explicit terms. What did people tell you about why they were unable to speak about it openly?
Yeah, you have to remember, like, culturally, it was really different back then. There hasn't been this, like, sort of cultural reckoning that we've even had in the past few years. The scandals of sexual abuse in the Catholic Church hadn't been uncovered. We hadn't seen these huge sports abuse scandals such as Michigan State and Penn State. So this wasn't, like, really on an athlete's radar, so to speak, or even anyone's radar. It wasn't front and center of cultural conversation. I talked to one player who said, listen, this is a case of we could have done anything you asked of us on the ice physically. They were huge D1 athletes at a premier program, so they're elite athletes. But like emotionally, we just were not equipped to even process what was going on and to understand the depth and the severity and the gravity of that.
And since your report was published, the University of Minnesota has launched an investigation as well.
That's right. A few hours after our story published, Mark Coyle, who's the athletic director for the University of Minnesota, sent a letter to former players on that 84-85 Gophers team and said basically two things. One, we're aware of these allegations in the Athletics article, and we are sorry for anyone that was harmed in any way. And two, we want to get to the bottom of this. So we have retained a law firm to determine what happened. And if you have any information, we'd like you to come forward.
And where is Adratus now?
According to property records, he lives in Florida, in St. Petersburg area. He is currently serving a temporary suspension pending the completion of this Safe Sport investigation. And Safe Sport is a central clearinghouse that investigates sexual abuse and misconduct that happens within any national governing body under the USOC umbrella structure.
How has that investigation gone? At some point, the FBI was involved.
Yeah, there was some consultation with the FBI at one point just because Mike Sachs was transported across state lines. What they ultimately deduced was that, you know, the statute of limitations had expired from my understanding and that it would not meet sort of the specifications of an active case that the FBI would take on. But from my understanding, the active investigatory element of this entire investigation by Safe Sport has been completed. So a report will now be submitted, and basically Sachs and others who have cooperated with this investigation will await a final decision being rendered and then discipline being administered.
What has Adratus, either himself or through his attorney, had to say about these accusations?
I've only had a very brief conversation with him, which was the result of many messages left for him to provide him the opportunity to respond to these allegations. And he said, I've never sexually abused anyone. And he referred me to his attorney, and his attorney issued a categorical and unequivocal denial.
So, Katie, you referenced the Catholic Church scandal. What parallels do you see between that and this?
I think if I had to identify one common denominator, it would be inaction. In both of these cases, this was treated as an open secret and normalized in some way, I think. And this person was able to go from job to job to job, followed consistently by these rumors and stories, and no one really did anything.
And Katie, Mike Sachs is now 52 years old. What has his life been like since quitting hockey at 18?
Well, I think it was incredibly traumatizing for him to lose this thing that he loved on the account of something that someone else did to him. He basically had his dream ripped away from him and his entire future crumbled. And he had to really kind of scramble to make a different life for himself. He told me once, you know, I had to find something that I loved second and make it first, because that first love was hockey and that first love was taken away from him. Mike has gone through really long stretches of rage and self-loathing and isolation and shame. It's affected his personal life, his family, his willingness to trust, his interest in sort of forming relationships with other people and engaging. He really likes music and he goes to concerts a lot. And he's said before, like, I wonder if this is my way of still being around people without having to engage, without having to let people in, without having to trust. But that often he does prefer to be alone.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for joining us and for your reporting on this.
Thanks for having me, Kavitha.
You can read Katie Strang's written account of this story at theathletic.com. And one quick point of clarification, the letter that Mike Sacks wrote to Robert Morris University and the American College Hockey Association about Thomas Adratis was given to USA Hockey and prompted the investigation by SafeSport.
Since Katie first reported this story, the SafeSport investigation found evidence to establish that Thomas Adratis exploited at least six additional athletes beyond three who went on the record with The Athletic and cooperated with the SafeSport investigation. SafeSport issued him a lifetime ban, prohibiting him from coaching at any level of USA Hockey for the rest of his life. Jim Smith, the current president of USA Hockey, is now under investigation by SafeSport concerning his handling of sexual abuse and misconduct allegations against Adratis. Additionally, USA Hockey hired an independent investigator to launch a separate probe into Smith's financial dealings with AHI, the Illinois youth hockey affiliate. You can read all of Katie's reporting on this at theathletic.com.
If you or someone you know is a survivor of sexual assault, you can call the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-HOPE. That's 1-800-656-4673. Or visit hotline.rain.org or childusa.org to receive confidential support. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know, with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.